This is Radio Equal Shock with your host, Alex Smith.
You can't turn on the TV news without getting weather porn. Or maybe it is your turn to experience extreme weather. But is it climate change? We may be one step closer to knowing with a new study in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The lead author is Dr. Noah Diffenbaugh. His official title is Professor of Earth System Science and Senior Fellow at the Woods Institute for the Environment. Noah has led a key report for the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. He has advised a previous White House. From Stanford University, Noah Diffenbaugh, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks for having me.
You know, for a while, some scientists cautioned against drawing a direct connection between the long process of climate change and single events. Lately, there have been a string of papers investigating the role of climate change, in particular droughts, heat waves, or floods. Do we really know enough to nail it down?
Yeah, so over the last 10 to 15 years, there's been an explosion of research trying to develop methods for objectively testing whether or not global warming has had an influence on individual events. We know that global warming is happening. We know that that global warming is altering the climate of many regions. We know that the frequency and or severity of extreme events has been increasing in many parts of the world. So there are many reasons to hypothesize that global warming could be influencing the conditions that create these record-setting extreme events, and what we're seeing over the last decade, and as well as in this paper that we have out this week, is the development of objective scientific methods for testing that influence.
Right. Your paper is titled Quantifying the Influence of Global Warming on Unprecedented Extreme Climate Events. So what general questions did you set out to answer?
Well, so there's a couple ways you can think about how global warming could influence individual events like an individual heat wave, an individual flood, individual severe storm, individual drought. So, you know, one is that there's been a long-term trend in temperature. So globally, you know, that long-term trend is in temperature is what we call global warming, right? The temperature is going up at the global scale. When temperature goes up, we call it warming. It's global temperature, so that's global warming. So there's been a long-term trend in global temperature. There's been a long-term trend in the annual temperature in most parts of the world. So that global scale warming is reflected at the regional scale as well. So if you imagine that the, you know, a region is warming, let's say California, you know, we know has been warming. All else being equal, you know, temperature goes up, temperature goes down from year to year, but all else being equal, those ups and downs with a long-term warming, we expect that those ups will be warmer now than they were 100 years ago. So one way to approach this question of what's the influence of global warming on the record-setting extreme event is to ask, you know, has that long-term trend played a role? So just looking at the historical observations, we can ask, has there been a long-term trend, whether it's in temperature or precipitation or some other variable? If there has been a long-term trend, how much did that long-term trend influence the probability and severity of an individual event?
It's been kind of shocking. It was in the low 80s in New York, like summer in April, and a nasty heat wave hit eastern India lately. On April 20th, Pakistan experienced the hottest day ever recorded for the month of April, was 50 degrees C, 122 degrees Fahrenheit. Is it safe to say we're entering a time when breaking records is the new normal?
Well, so what we found in this paper is that for the hottest events, so the hottest day of the year, the hottest month of the year, the record-setting event has been made more likely by global warming at more than 80% of the surface area, you know, where we have reliable observations. And that's true whether we're just looking at the historical trend, just looking at weather observations, Or if we also look at simulations with climate models that allow us to test the influence of the human emission of greenhouse gases relative to a world in which those human contributions didn't occur. So whether we look at just historical observations or historical observations plus climate models, we find that for the hottest events, the record-setting hot events, that global warming has had an influence at more than 80% of the surface area where we have reliable observations.
I'm trying to figure out where your paper fits in with other new research that's coming out about this. A couple of weeks ago, I interviewed Michael Mann about a paper published in the journal Nature. The title is Influence of Anthropogenic Climate Change on Planetary Wave Resonance and Extreme Weather Events. How does your new research relate to other work coming out in the field?
Well, there's a couple ways that our work relates. One is that there's been a lot of research, including from my group, but from many other research groups around the world as well, looking at individual case studies. So looking at the California drought over the last 5 years or so, looking at severe precipitation that caused catastrophic flooding in northern India in June of 2013, looking at the record warm July temperatures that occurred in the United States, a record at that time in 2012, and we saw all those impacts on agriculture, for example. So looking at individual case studies and trying to test whether or not global warming played a role, that's been the state of the research over the last decade or so, and we've learned a lot from all that research. What we've done in this paper is we've looked globally and we've asked, you know, if we use multiple different measures of the potential influence of global warming on an individual event, and we look at multiple different kinds of extreme events, hot, you know, hottest day of the year, also longer term hottest month of the year, dry, the driest year on record, wet, you know, wettest 5-day period on record. If we look at a number of different kinds of climate extremes, and we look all across the globe and analyze all across the globe, each area of the globe, multiple different kinds of climate extremes using multiple different kinds of metrics, what do we see at the global scale? So that's a different way of asking this question than at the individual case study scale, both of which are important. The other way that our work fits is that what we show in the paper is that we can use the same framework where we're analyzing all the events across all the areas where we have observations. We can use that same approach to look at the physical conditions that happen in an individual event. So the record high moisture in the atmosphere that occurred during the Colorado flooding in 2013, the record the persistence of this atmospheric ridging that occurred in the region around Moscow during that 2010 Russia heat wave. And so the work that's been done on atmospheric circulation and the, you know, the role of the atmospheric circulation in extreme events, that our paper fits very well with that work as well, in that we're showing that we can do this kind of analysis to test the role of global warming, not just on temperature and precipitation that happens, you know, at the surface where we experience a heat wave or a flood, but also on the atmospheric conditions, these ingredients, those meteorological ingredients that create these rare events.
Well, now, this isn't specifically in your paper, but I know when it comes to wilder weather in the Northern Hemisphere, we'd had several scientists tell us about the increasing role of changes in the Arctic. Do you see that as an important factor?
Well, you know, for one thing, in this paper, we've looked at the record low Arctic sea ice extent. And, you know, the Arctic has seen just tremendous change over the past 3 to 4 decades. The Arctic sea ice is about 40% reduction in the mean Arctic sea ice extent, you know, at the end of the summer compared to the beginning of the satellite era. So that's a really rapid decline, and what we find in our paper is that there's very high statistical confidence that the record low summer sea ice extent that happened in 2012 is extremely unlikely without global warming. That global warming increased the odds and the severity of hitting that record low.
10 years ago, some said the Arctic would warm up a lot, but the tropics wouldn't warm that much. But lately, scientists like Matthew Huber of Purdue say there is really no control thermostat. Some places in the tropics will heat beyond human endurance to go outside. Noah Diffenbaugh, what does your study say about global warming in the tropics?
Well, so, you know, we've been trying to understand that the spatial pattern of changes in extreme heat for a number of years. And, you know, one of the things that we found back in 2011 in work out of my research group is that even though the magnitude of temperature change has been greater in the high latitudes than the tropics, the year-to-year variability in the tropics is much lower. And what that means is that it takes less magnitude of warming to move outside of the historical envelope that, you know, that those tropical areas are accustomed to. So, you know, that's been known for a few years now. What we find in this paper out this week is very consistent with that. So in terms of not the mean warming, but when we look at the hottest event that has occurred in different areas of the globe, we find that the influence of global warming on both the magnitude of the record-setting hot event and the probability of the record-setting hot event, that global warming has had a stronger influence in the tropics for both of those.
You are listening to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. My guest is Stanford climate scientist Noah Diffenbaugh. And we are talking about new science connecting extreme weather to climate change. Are there places in the world that will be safer, more protected from extreme weather events?
Well, you know, climate change has occurred all around the world already. We've had about a degree Celsius of global warming over the last century, and we are seeing the impacts of that already. And we see that in the oceans. We see that on land. We see that from the coast to the mountains. We see it from the tropics to the poles. And you know, global warming is here and now. The effects on regional climate are here and now. The impacts on people and other living things, ecosystems, you know, those are here and now. So there's no question that there's heterogeneity in both the physical processes that create climate change and in the climate outcomes. So certainly there are, climate change is not uniform across the globe. And, you know, really because the impacts are not just a function of the physical climate change, but also of the exposure and vulnerability, what is, you know, how many people, what kind of infrastructure, which ecosystems are exposed, and how vulnerable each of those is, we know that the impacts are not uniform across the globe. So certainly we see different flavors in different locations, but you know, certainly there are a lot of opportunities to build resilience, to catch up with the climate change that's already happened and prepare for the climate change that will happen in the future.
Your new paper was edited by Kerry Emanuel from MIT, who has also predicted more extreme weather. Do you two see eye to eye on the implications of global warming for public weather emergencies?
Well, I certainly would let Kerry speak for himself, for his own view on that. I think that, you know, what we do see around the world and here in the United States is that we are incurring costs year after year from climate and weather disasters. That's been the case for a long time, but you know, if we look over the last decade or so, there have been more than 80 individual climate and weather disasters that have each caused more than $1 billion in damage here in the United States. So you know, you add that up over a decade and the loss of life and the impact on people's lives and the economic cost, we're paying out quite a bit. We're incurring quite a cost right now. So, you know, it's clear that we're not adapted to the climate that we have. If we were adapted to the climate that we have, we wouldn't be incurring such a cost from climate and weather disasters. So there are a lot of opportunities for society to better prepare, to reduce those costs from climate and weather disasters.
Yes, we used to be told climate change was a slow development over decades or centuries. Noah, do you think a more sudden jump in heating or storms is possible, so we see the change sooner rather than later?
Well, I mean, global warming has unfolded over the last century plus. Certainly the 1 degree Celsius of global warming that we've experienced in the last century is, that's a long-term warming. So there certainly is a long-term component to it. But, where we, feel the climate system most acutely, both people and ecosystems, are in extreme events. And it's clear that extremes are increasing in frequency and or severity in many parts of the world. And it's also clear from research like ours that's published this week, but also from many research groups over the last decade, it's clear that global warming is influencing extreme events around the world, including here in the United States.
Are you still editor-in-chief of the scientific journal Geophysical Research Letters?
I am indeed. I was being editor-in-chief just this morning.
I was thinking that must give you an inside track on a lot of great new research.
Yeah, well, we certainly get a lot of submissions, and we publish a lot of what we think are excellent papers.
I think it's an important journal, I do. So you've been consistent, Noah, in saying humans are changing weather in extreme ways when we pollute the atmosphere. I remember interviewing you in 2007 about that. Do you personally get any pushback from speaking and publishing about the links between climate and weather?
I think it's public knowledge that there are climate skeptics. I think as a scientist, I think every scientist would say that they themselves are a skeptic. We're our own most stern skeptics, and certainly in my research, I try to be as skeptical as possible of everything that we do in my research group. But it's clear that there are people in our government, there are people outside of our government that misrepresent the state of scientific knowledge. Whether they're doing that intentionally or not, there are influential people that do not accurately describe the state of scientific knowledge. And to state the state of scientific knowledge accurately, we know that global warming is happening. It's simply a measured fact about planet Earth. We know that the climate is changing in regions across the world. We know that extreme events are increasing in many parts of the world. And we know that, including from this research that we've published this week, that the record-setting event has, for severe hot events, has been influenced by that global warming over large fractions of the globe.
What can other scientists do now with the study that you've just led as published in PNAS?
Well, I think, we have a framework for studying individual events wherever they occur. A big part of our goal has been to create a transparent framework that clearly evaluates the scientific credibility. We start from the position in our framework that we've published this week starts from the position that global warming hasn't played a role. It's similar to the presumption of innocence in our legal system. The default position is that any individual event occurred because of randomness, occurred because of bad luck, and it takes a very high burden of proof to overcome that starting position. So, we've tried to publish a transparent methodology that is a skeptical methodology, a conservative methodology. We don't want to overstate the influence of global warming. We want to be very confident that there is a true signal before we reject the null hypothesis of noise or randomness. I think that this framework hopefully will provide other researchers with a foundation for analyzing other events. And critically, one of the points that we emphasize in our work and in the paper is the importance of understanding the physical causes of different events and distinguishing absence of evidence from evidence of absence. We want to really be thorough in analyzing all of the possible physical contributions to an individual event when we have these record-setting events that are way out in the tail of the distribution, and that means that they've resulted from an unlikely occurrence of physical ingredients, and our framework provides a way to test each of those ingredients and their role in the event.
Well, Noah, we're going to have to let you go. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us today.
It's my pleasure. I've really enjoyed it.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.